We're reading from James chapter 1, verse 2 to 18. Consider it pure joy, my brothers, whenever you face trials of many kinds, because you know that the testing of your faith develops perseverance. Perseverance must finish its work, so that you may be mature and complete, not lacking anything. If any of you lacks wisdom, he should ask God, who gives generously to all without finding fault, and it will be given to him. But when he asks, he must believe and not doubt, because he who doubts is like a wave of the sea, blown and tossed by the wind. That man should not think he will receive anything from the Lord. He is a double-minded man, unstable in all he does. The brother in humble circumstances ought to take pride in his high position. But the one who is rich should take pride in his low position, because he will pass away like a wild flower. For the sun rises with scorching heat and withers the plant. Its blossom falls and its beauty is destroyed. In the same way, the rich man will fade away even while he goes about his business. Blessed is the man who perseveres under trial, because when he has stood the test, he will receive the crown of life that God has promised to those who love him. When tempted, no one should say, God is tempting me. For God cannot be tempted by evil, nor does he tempt anyone. But each one is tempted when by his own evil desire he is dragged away and enticed. Then, after desire has conceived, it gives birth to sin, and sin, when it is full grown, gives birth to death. Don't be deceived, my dear brothers. Every good and perfect gift is from above, coming down from the Father of the heavenly lights, who does not change like shifting shadows. He chose to give us birth through the word of truth, that we might be a kind of first fruits of all he created. This is the word of the Lord.
Good, well, good morning to all of you. If I haven't greeted you or seen you yet, let's dive straight into the word. We've already prayed, so I'll get into this word for us this morning. If you look at your outline, this is the final one of the three-part series that I've been doing. So if you've been here over the last 3 weeks, yes, you've heard this passage over and over again. And maybe you're at the point where you've got a bit of a love-hate relationship with this passage. There's parts of it that you absolutely love because it sounds so true and amazing, and it fills you with an excitement, and you want to feel joyful about it, but then you hit the next verse and you feel despondent and frustrated, and so this is kind of, maybe it's true to you, but it's true to me. That's how I've been feeling while working through this passage in James, and in fact the whole of James. So if you haven't yet read it, do read the whole of James. This is just the start of it. There's so much more to James than just this. But this is the way James writes. He's got this way of saying a lot with a few words, and you need to keep actually coming back to it and working through it and seeing everything that it says. And today's section that we're going to look at in particular is James 1, verse 9 to 11. So I've put it there on your outline. It says, let the lowly brother boast in his exaltation and the rich in his humiliation, because like the flower of the grass, he will pass away, for the sun rises with its scorching heat and withers the grass. Its flower falls and its beauty perishes. So also will the rich man fade away in the midst of his pursuits. So I don't know how that makes you feel this morning when you read that. Maybe you're thinking, who am I in this story and this image that he's giving? Am I the lowly brother who should boast in his exaltation, or am I the rich who should boast then in his humiliation? Where do you feel you find yourself fitting in? Well, I've put there in the box Psalm 103, verse 15 to 19. It's one of the cases where you find the similar language coming through. And I just want to read this for us as we get started. It says, as for a man, his days are like grass. He flourishes like a flower of the field. For the wind passes over it and it is gone, and its place knows it no more. But the steadfast love of the Lord is from everlasting to everlasting on those who fear him, and his righteousness to children's children. To those who keep his covenant and remember to do his commandments, the Lord has established his throne in the heavens and his kingdom rules over all. Isn't that a beautiful passage? Maybe it gives you a slightly different angle when you're thinking about this. This passage that we're looking at this morning feels that we're looking very much inwardly, whereas the psalmist tells us to consider God in light of man's fleetingness. The fact that man is fading away and just fading into this world and disappearing, the psalmist is encouraging us to look to who God is, that God is the everlasting God, and that he is the righteous one, he is the steadfast one. And so as we come to today's section that we're going to be looking at, we need to keep in mind what we have been looking at for the last 2 weeks. So this part that we're dealing with is counting it all joy. He starts this whole thing off by saying in verse 2, count it all joy, my brothers. Well, count it all joy. In the previous 2 weeks, we looked at it, counting it all joy in our trials, in our sufferings, in our hardships. And then we said, counting it all joy in our pursuit for wisdom. And today we're going to look at counting it all joy in our humility. But as we remember what we did last week, you see the psalmist and how he captures it when he says in his word here, in verse 17, he says, but the steadfast love of the Lord is from everlasting to everlasting on those who fear him. And if you remember last week, we looked at what wisdom is. Wisdom is found when we get to our knees and we begin to fear the Lord and we are drawn to him. And that's when we begin to find wisdom. And then he completes this, the psalmist says, and his righteousness to the children's children, to those who keep his covenant and remember to do his commandments. And in this passage, we're going to see this morning that in one sense, it is about how we live our lives, but it's how our lives look when we do live our lives. And I'll explain what I mean by that as we go. I put there another quote, but this one from James himself. It's James 3, verse 13 to 14 as we get started. And thinking about that idea of wisdom from last week and moving to this week, he says, who is wise and understanding among you? By his good conduct, let him show his works in the meekness of wisdom. But if you have bitter jealousy and selfish ambition in your hearts, do not boast and be false to the truth. That's a strong word by James as he says, he asks the question, who is wise among you? Who would define himself as wise first and foremost? And then he says, well, look at the type of wisdom that you have. Is it grounded in works? Or as he says, show his works in the meekness of wisdom. That's quite a unique thing to say. I've never quite heard it like that before. But as you think of what James is saying, are your works grounded by meekness in wisdom? As God gives you his wisdom, as you ask him, as we read last week, James saying, ask the Lord for wisdom. And as you find that wisdom, are you using that wisdom in meekness? Not to bombard, not to bulldoze, not to run over everybody with the wisdom that God gives you, but to do it in a way that is God-honoring and God-glorifying. And in light of your circumstance, are you able to use that wisdom? So as we think about today's section, we ask the question, why do we count humility as something worth being joyful over? As I've wrestled with that thought, it's not something that the world considers a good thing. Humility is often a giving up of your power, giving it up something that you have, maybe it's your authority, maybe it's your strength, and that's this idea that the world has. So when you are said to be humble, you have this image of a person getting to their knees. You have an image of a person getting to their knees and people towering over them in one sense. And when we look at that within a worldly perspective, that doesn't seem to be the image that the world is putting out there. The world is saying, how can you better your life? How can you make your status greater? How can you make your wealth wealthier? How can you make yourself bigger and better and last longer? Everywhere where we look, there's things out there to better satisfy you, have a better quality of life, have a better you, whether it's to prolong your life, whether it's to pursue things that are going to make you more powerful, greater. Well, is that what life is really about? So how do we count this pure joy, or count it all joy, when we say that we need to pursue humility? Well, maybe that's a difficult thing for you to wrestle with. Maybe you don't like the word humility. And if you're like me, generally you don't, because humility means giving up something of yourself. And so in your outline there, I've given three, what I call them, realities. Reality one, I'll work through them for us to just contemplate them. I say reality one, all things here on earth will fade away. And this is a helpful thing to consider. James tells us, and he quotes a similar kind of phrase, when he says that, because like a flower of the grass, he will pass away. The sun rises with its scorching heat and withers the grass. Its flower falls and its beauty perishes. James is drawing our attention to the reality that all things fade away eventually. Nothing on this earth, nothing that is made, whether you or me or the grass or the flowers outside, will last. But they will fade away. They are fleeting. And if James isn't enough for you, you can go and look at Psalm 37. That whole psalm is incredible. And it captures also this idea of the fading away, this flower of the field that perishes. Psalm 103, which we read. Isaiah 40, verse 6 to 8, is another area where you can see the same image. And then in the New Testament, you've got 1 Peter 1 and 24. And these are places that you can just go and look and see what these people have written around the fading away of things. In one context, the things of the world will fade away in the midst of your enemy and evil things. So in one context, we're challenged not to look to the gain that people that do evil, what they gain. We mustn't look to that, and rather recognize that all things will fade away. And perhaps one of the most incredible sections is Isaiah 40. Maybe you know that there is something that comes out of Isaiah 40. It's a well-known passage with regards to God preparing the way for his people. And after he has said that he is going to prepare a way in the wilderness, he then comes to this point, Isaiah says this, the same kind of image of the flowers of the field fading away. Why does he do this? Well, as we look at it, it seems like what the authors of these passages are doing is a very similar thing in the bigger scheme. Is alongside the contrast of things in this world, us, our lives fading away, it's contrasted against God's goodness. It's contrasted against the certainty of who God is. And though this world is corrupted and fading and failing, God remains constant. God remains good. God remains certain. So reality one, all things on this earth will fade away. Reality two, God often wants the opposite of what you may want. Have any of you encountered that? Have you? You ask God for something and you seem to get the opposite. I always laugh. It's the same kind of thing. You ask God to help you to be patient. And what does he do? Well, he gives you opportunities to be patient. But meanwhile, if you really listen to what your heart was asking in the moment, you're saying, Lord, I don't want to have to be patient. So don't give me opportunities. But yet he gives you opportunities to learn to grow in patience. And James kind of captures that very well in this passage. In James 9, he says, let the lowly brother boast in his exaltation and the rich in his humiliation. Do you notice the strangeness of what is being said here? Do you see how peculiar it is? Let the poor boast in his exaltation and the rich be humiliated, or the rich boast in their humiliation. See, we want to flip it around. We want to say the poor must recognize their humiliation. And we want to say the rich must recognize and boast in their exaltation, their riches. Well, James has grasped a piece of wisdom here, an insight, and he's saying, no, the poor must boast in their exaltation, and the rich must boast in their humiliation. It's upside down. Do you feel that? Who of you sitting here would do that? It's hard to do it when you're in a position where you feel you can't. If you're in a position of feeling poor or struggling or in hardship, it's difficult to boast in exaltation. When you feel that you're at the end of yourself, to be able to boast in exaltation seems to be difficult. And when you have plenty, when you feel like life is going good for you and you're prospering, it's hard to try and boast in humiliation, if that makes sense. Because when we are in that position, we can't see it. We feel we have what we need, and there is nothing to be humiliated about. But James here says that we need to recognize that life is fleeting. And he helps us to understand that when he says in the second half of verse 10, because like a flower of the grass, he will pass away. Whether you are poor, whether you are rich, whether you are struggling, whether you are prospering, life will fade away. But the second reality is to know where you stand. It's to know where you stand and know how you need to respond. If you find yourself in a good space, to not value your prosperity, not to value your goodness of life, the circumstances, the conditions, and in your poverty, in the poorness of life, in the struggles of life, not to make yourself lower, but to recognize the God who brings you up. All things are fading. Reality three, and this for me helps to tie it all in, is that Christ humbled himself for you. Christ humbled himself for you. Let's read there, Philippians 2, verse 8 to 11. It says, and being found in human form, he humbled himself by becoming obedient to the point of death, even death on a cross. Therefore God has highly exalted him and bestowed on him the name that is above every name, so that at the name of Jesus every knee should bow, in heaven and on earth and under the earth, and every tongue confess that Jesus Christ is Lord, to the glory of God the Father. I've just made bold some things there that I want to draw our attention to just briefly, and how it ties up with what James is saying here. We see that Jesus Christ himself humbled himself. How? By being obedient to the point of death. But it was the next line that caught my attention most strongly. It says, even death on a cross. It was a humiliating death. It was a death fit for someone that deserved it. It was fit for someone that was to be humiliated within society. And here Jesus faced that death. He suffered at the hands of men who mocked him, who laughed at him, who scorned him. But then listen to the next line. Therefore, God has highly exalted him. Isn't that amazing?